This is the one where they meet the Romans.
Hence the title.
And there's a dead troubadour.
And some slave traders.
And a galley.
And a dumbass leching Nero.
It's called the Romans.
We covered that already.
Here we go.
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space. Encountering Dalek, Stalinood, and the Cybertronic race. The Tarans look like taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales. And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales. Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when? Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please. Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than
who back when?
Who back when?
Hello, and welcome to episode 012, or 012, if you will, of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Flappy.
And I am Pumpkin. Hi, Flappy, how are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. And today, today we will be reviewing The Romans.
Yes, we will.
It's going to be epic.
It will!
In the traditional sense.
Yes, in the traditional sense of the word.
Not that Homer knew about Romans, but you know what we mean.
Told us what we mean.
Yeah. So I think before we do anything, we should say a huge thank you.
We have a special announcement. Oh my god, I think we need to like almost announce this in stages.
Dudes.
Andre.
Dudes.
Okay. Number one, you may not know this, but there's going to be like a Doctor Who 50th anniversary convention.
I think you probably knew that.
You probably knew that.
You probably knew
In that. Case you didn't, there is going to be one. In case you didn't know, it is freaking impossible to get tickets for this.
Yeah, we did try, but we were sadly too late.
Yeah,
yeah,
because they sold out after like half an hour.
We went on that evening.
Yeah,
on the day it was released.
God, how naive we were.
Yeah,
but so check this
People
out.
People had been camping out for years.
Yeah,
yeah.
There is obviously no hope for us getting these tickets. Because it is impossible.
Absolutely.
There are no more tickets. And if we were to sculpt them, it would literally cost us like
hundreds.
An arm and a leg, literally.
Yeah.
They're going to be with like bone sores and things.
Well, yeah, the kind of people who would sell a ticket like that.
Yeah, exactly.
With one arms and legs,
like,
you know?
We got a ticket. Do you actually need your spleen?
Yeah.
So, spoiler alert. Who back when is going to be at the con?
Fuck yeah.
Shit, yes, people of podcast land. We will be at the convention, and it's all thanks to two fantastic hombres.
JD and Brendan.
Oh my god.
We salute you.
Our fantastic fans. Oh my god. JD, you are a legend. Brendan, as are you. We have yet to actually get properly acquainted, but I think I can give you a spoiler alert. Both of you are going to get such a freaking amazing hug.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I mean, I don't generally do hugs, but for you guys, definitely.
So thank you very much. I might actually add a fanfare or something.
Yeah. Pretty cool. We'll buy them a drink. Buy them a coffee.
Yes.
Yeah.
It'll be great. Yes. So thanks again. We are going to be at the con. If anyone else is going to be at the con, then, oh my god, please let us know. Tweet me and we'll meet up at the con and it'll be great. We're going to be there on the 23rd.
So. And will we be conducting any kind of review of the con?
Oh shit, yes. We're going to do a bonus episode about the con, about the 50th. It's going to be epic.
Do you reckon we'll be able to keep it under 2 hours?
We'll see. I give you no promises.
Let's take lots of pictures. It'll be great.
Mm.
Yeah.
Are you going in cosplay?
No, Lord no. Absolutely Lord no. I don't do things like that.
I might wear a bow tie. We'll see.
All right. You're the same guy who, when we went to see the Star Trek movie,
went in the uniform.
Dressed up in full uniform.
Excuse me, obviously.
You know, Amanda pretended to not know you, right?
Well, it was difficult. We sat next to each other. Anyway, this isn't the Star Trek podcast. Also, we're going to start keeping these short. Anyway, okie dokie, shall we?
Yeah, I think
it might be time for what?
bite-sized chunk of who?
We need a jingle.
Yeah, we totally do. You're gonna have so much editing to do.
Yeah.
So should I lead off, or do you want to lead off?
Yeah, I don't mind. Up to you.
Okay. So basically, as we left it at the last episode, the TARDIS has fallen over a cliff, quite literally on a literal cliffhanger. And all of a sudden, the whole troop is in Roman garb, eating grapes. Well, Ian is at least. And apparently they've been doing so for about a month.
Yeah. And the troop, obviously, they split up with Doc and Vicky going to Rome in one group. And Barb and Ian in not one, but two other groups being kidnapped by slave traders and separated.
Yeah, separately. So Barb, it turns out, is made a slave in Nero's palace. Ian is put in a galley, and the Doctor impersonates a travelling murderous troubadour.
Inappropriate laughter and madness ensue.
It is actually a great plot. It's a weird episode. I'll say that from the very outset. Yeah. It is the weirdest episode of Doctor Who.
Spoiler alert, I really enjoyed it.
Oh, I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
It had this sort of off-kilter humour to it. Like black, dark humour to it.
Well, yeah, the fact that the darkest things imaginable are like accompanied by the official soundtrack to Lauren and Hardy's The Flying Deuces.
Well, so what are the worst things you can think of? Murder's bad. So that's pretty
bad. Yeah, there's a saxophonist in the background.
Rape's terrible.
Rape is really terrible.
An
awful thing. Maybe you shouldn't have Christmas music too.
Slavery. Slavery's harsh. I mean, it is a harsh reality.
Oh, we're getting ahead of ourselves, Flappy.
All of these things, the Doctor finds absolutely hilarious. Yeah.
All right, well, hope you enjoyed the bite-sized chunk of Who and that it was of great service to you.
I'm sure it was, people.
Let's go on with part one, shall we? Episode
yeah,
one, The Slave Traders.
Just cannot wait.
Do you want to take it
so, away? As I said in the bite-sized chunk of Who, everybody wakes up. It seemed a bit random to me. Like, it just cut from TARDIS falling over a cliff to all of a sudden Ian's eating grapes.
He's stuffing his face with the... It is crazy.
Everybody's super happy. Ian's, like, lounging. Like, yeah. He's literally lounging.
Ian, the Doctor, and the notorious VIB. Sorry, BIV. The notorious BIV.
Like, the Doc is actually...
lounging!
He's watering plants, to be fair. The Doc is watering plants.
Fine. But they've basically broken into this house.
Yeah.
and stolen the clothes they're in.
Which isn't explained as anything other than they broke into someone's house.
Yeah, the dude is in Gaul, like, fighting Asterix, basically.
Yeah, yeah. So...
Actually, Bob and Vicky aren't there at the moment.
No,
they're not.
Bob and Vicky...
We're off to a great start.
So Bob and Vicky have actually gone down to the local Roman village. So they're walking into town, and Vicky comments that they've been there for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, aren't they thinking of moving on?
Yeah, she's sort of annoyed by their phlegmatic tendencies,
well,
in a way.
Well, yeah,
she wants adventure. She wants the adventure that the Doctor promised her.
Yeah, what was it the Doctor said? He was, adventure, I can promise you plenty of it. Like, in a really sort of...
Yeah, while scratching his groin.
Yeah. But what the hell does she want? She's been taken to Rome, for God's sake. Well, actually, not Rome, but she's been taken to, like, Rome.
The Roman Empire. Ancient Rome.
Yeah.
Pretty cool, Miss Barb, but not to her.
She's not fucking impressed.
By the way, hang on. We need to cover something before we go on with this entire storyline.
Mm-hmm.
We have now gotten to know Vicky a bit more. Like, a bit better.
Yeah.
Have you changed your opinion of her?
Yeah, I guess I have. I hate her even more than I did in the first place. I thought she might develop somehow.
Okay.
She hasn't developed in the least bit. Only in a negative sense. She has shown herself to be a worse actress than initially thought. And I thought she was a bad actress to begin with. And sort of like a dead character, really. Like, she is like...
I feel like she has... And we'll see this throughout this episode, or the story, but, like, I feel like she's been given more screen time and more to do than Susan ever did.
Mm.
But it's all just nonsense.
Yeah.
Like, and also... Oh my God, I've got a question for you, dude.
Although Susan's script was terrible, and although the part wasn't great...
Yeah.
At least you got the sense of this otherworldliness from her. There was always this slightly intriguing thing.
Well, she was an alien.
Susan. Yeah, she's an alien. She's like, we don't know what the first 15 years of her life were like. Like, you know, what she's experienced, what she's seen, where she's been.
You could argue that you don't know that about Vicky either, though.
Yeah, but, like, Vicky is an Earth girl. Like, yeah, she's from the future.
Yeah.
But
not as exotic as a Time Lord's granddaughter.
Exactly.
Okay, got another question for you. Have you revised your opinion of how old she is? Because I have.
Really?
To me, she is a total child now.
Hmm. Interesting. I hadn't. Like, I assumed early 20s again.
I think she behaves like a child.
Well, yeah, she may behave like a child, but somebody in their early 20s might. I don't know. Because she's...
She's just very childish and naive and...
Well, the Doctor speaks to her like a child, but that was always going to be the case. He's got, like...
That's true.
A grandfatherly voice on whenever he speaks to her.
That's true.
Yeah.
Still, I think she's younger than we thought she would be, and thus the argument that she is older than Susan doesn't hold up.
Well,
and
I
thus,
think she's over
no,
the legal
you are not
limit.
Allowed to want her.
She's over the legal limit, I would say, certainly. And
so Susan!
Yeah, but she wasn't meant to be.
No, she was. 16 is the legal limit, right? 16 is the legal limit.
All right, let's review what we know about Vicky, then.
This is freaking 1960s. Right, surely they were more lax on it back then.
Let's review what we know about Vicky. Okay. She is...
We're going to get to the story in a moment, people.
She is a space traveller. Yeah. Vicky is a space traveller. She got that job somehow.
Like, she didn't get a job. Her dad got a job. She was moving somewhere with her dad.
I suppose that's true.
Her mum passed away, and her dad got a job on some other planet and took her on this space cruiser to wherever, and then they happened to crash on Dido. That's it.
Then why is it?
Like, she was not an employee of the spaceship.
So you think the upskirt shot was just a mistake?
Either that, or I was thinking maybe it's like that weird... I'm probably going to offend one subculture of nerddom here. Maybe it's like that weird manga anime type thing where you've got schoolgirls whose pants are constantly showing. Maybe it's like almost a childish element to the fact that she flashed her pants.
Really?
Yeah.
I honestly don't think so.
In that case, it was a mistake.
I honestly disagree. I think she is there to be
sexy,
to be lusted after.
Oh, I'll say this. She's a lot cuter now than she was in the first one, in The Rescue.
I still think she doesn't have a great face.
No, she doesn't have a great face. But I mean, it's not a... No, fuck it. Let's get back to Rome, dude. All right, anyway. Tangent over.
Jesus Christ. This is going to take days.
Let's get this done in an hour and a half. That's that, including reviews. Boom. Go for it.
Okay, so we left off with Vicky comments that they've been there for ages. And... in the meantime, we see a guy in the bushes lurking.
Yeah, I've got it down as it cut to a dastardly looking hombre sharpening a sword and then heading towards them with a twinkle of murder in his eyes.
Dastardly is the word. We see a dastardly man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like she jinxes it. She's like, I want adventure. Boom, cut to murderer. Anyway.
So the next thing we see is lots of activity down by the marketplace, yeah. And we cut to these two guys who turn out to be slave traders.
Yeah, what are they called? I've got them down as Idius and Sacharia.
Oh, I had Didius.
Oh, Didius, okay.
You might be right with Idius, but whatever, I don't think it really matters.
I've got them as Beard and Slave Dude.
Okay, fine. we'll rock with that.
All right.
So they're talking about how they're not making very much money, they're in a little town. Basically.
Yeah, they're clearly kidnapping people to become slaves.
Yeah,
they're not looking for work, they're looking for people to kidnap to become slaves.
Well, yeah, they're looking for people to trade. To kidnap people.
In fact, what they say is, like, this is their last chance to raid a town before they hit Rome, which is where they plan to sell their slaves.
So they're making inquiries about the local young women, is the ones they're mainly interested in.
Yeah.
And their first port of call is to ask this lady at a market stall who's just been talking to Vicky and Barb.
Well, yeah, they spot VB and realise that they're Britons,
mm-hmm.
and therefore, this is weird to me, by the way, therefore they are more valuable as slaves.
Yeah, which is true.
Because they knew the language, is that it?
It was true that Britons were very highly valued slaves.
Really?
Because they were thought to be big and strong and healthy and...
This is weird, they see these two people, they are not big and strong.
Yeah, like, they're not big and strong, no, that's true.
Barb is quite tall. Yeah, she is quite tall.
Like
but
a Briton.
Vicky does not look healthy to me. She looks, if anything, anemic.
Right. Yeah, and we haven't really worked out what's going on with the language either. Like, is the TARDIS translating this? And
probably.
Do they have, like, British accents? I don't know.
I think it's because they... Doesn't Vicky like, they in your brain say something about, like...
We are from...
British...
We're from London. And Barb says, no, we're from London.
And that's how they find out. Anyway, so Vicky No Brains wants Barb to buy her some silk, but has got haggling completely ass backwards.
Uh-huh.
So the slaver dudes turn up once Barb has taken her away from the store, because clearly she's just going to buy the first thing for the most money in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, as you said, they bribe this store lady for information.
Many, many times.
Many, many times. Yeah. And they find out that they are staying in a house north of the town, have been there for about a month, and the owner, Fabius, is in Gaul.
Yeah.
With Asterix and Obelix.
So, we go back to the villa.
No, Troubadour.
Do we?
Yeah. Cut to the old Troubadour. So, as they leave the market, another man is also leaving the market. This old guy carrying a lyre. And so he's like this Troubadour dude.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically just leaves the market only to be brutally murdered by the aforementioned creepy sword gringo.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Then cut to Casa Fabius. Okay,
so we cut back to the villa and the troop are eating and laughing.
Yeah.
and Ian actually comments that he'd like to stay for as long as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we also find out that
they haven't even changed. My theory that they've just given up hope of ever returning home. Like, he's willing to settle for anything that's halfway possible.
Do you think so? I think it's not just halfway possible. I think they're living a life of opulence.
Well, they are, but they must know it's not going to last forever.
No, that's true. But I don't think he wants to stay there forever, really. I think he's just enjoying the fact that they're on holiday, basically.
Okay, yeah.
They're not being kidnapped by people. Spoiler alert. That's going to happen. and, like, they're not fighting Aztecs or being brainwashed by sensorites or anything. He just wants to eat grapes and enjoy life.
Okay, fine.
And we also find out that the TARDIS is still where it crashed.
Yeah.
Like, they haven't even checked on it.
And Ian's a little bit worried about this, but the Doctor seems really offended that Ian's worried.
Yeah, all he has to say about it is like, oh, but dude, like, don't worry about it, Mr. Science Teacher dude, because the TARDIS can take off even when it's diagonal.
But
like,
what
the fuck, man?
But the Doctor's annoyance actually sets up this whole story.
Yeah.
Because the Doctor's like, I'm so offended. Like, you people are so terrible. I need to spend some time away from you.
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to leaving.
You're all so annoying. Except for you, Vicky.
Yeah, by the way, he refers to Ian Chesterton as Chesterfield.
Yeah.
It's great.
Oh, there's a funny little joke sequence, actually, which I think one of our reviewers picked up on, which is, what was it? The Doctor calls him Chesterfield, and yeah. To which Barb says, "No, it's Chesterton."
Yeah.
To which the Doctor says,
"Oh, I think Barb's calling you."
Yeah.
so good.
But this episode is infused with little jokes. Like, it's it's quite nice, like wordplay.
Oh, absolutely. And should also point out, there is some serious chemistry between Barb and Ian here.
Okay, we'll get
that. Yeah, we'll get that.
A few times.
I know. Oh my god, those two, like, they're just waiting.
They are on the edge, like, a few times. They just get plastered together.
I know! Just like, they're just waiting for an opportunity to give each other handjobs in the atrium. This is going to happen.
Play fighting.
I know, it's great. We'll get to that. Okay.
Anyway, so the Doctor's really annoyed. He's going to go to Rome.
Yeah.
He needs some time away.
Yeah.
And he's going to take Vicky with him.
Yeah, he's not only going to take Vicky with him, he also takes with him an apple and some grapes and says this should last him 2 or 3 days. So Vicky's coming along. Barb and Ian want to come along, but he's like, yeah, you just said you wanted a holiday, so screw you guys. Mm-hmm. You're staying here. And then
the flirting begins.
Oh my god, the second the Doctor and his surrogate granddaughter are in the room.
They literally cannot keep their hands off.
Oh my god.
She starts tussling with Ian's hair.
We also have a soundbite in which Bob and Ian are discussing how what he looks like in his Roman garb. Soundbite?
Soundbite.
Soundbite.
What's the matter? My slip showing?
No. I was just thinking what a splendid-looking Roman you make.
Oh. Well, yes. I wasn't so modest, I'd agree with you.
Boom shakalak. Oh my god, they are totally going to bone.
But then Ian starts reciting Julius Caesar.
Yeah, yes, okay, that's true. And she does his hair.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
It's so sexy. When she's doing his hair. It's just like...
I had a semi during that entire scene.
So this has been coming for quite some time.
Yeah, and it will.
do you know what? She did his hair very Roman-like.
Oh, she did.
Did a really good job.
Great job. He looks so good without that...
So how is it you look like a Roman? Because they did a really good job of it. Is it just basically push all your hair forward?
Forward, yeah. And no parting on the side.
Yeah.
I guess that's it. Like, he looks impeccably English with his side parting, so get that out of there. He even asks her, like, how long do you reckon the dog's going to be away? He, in his mind, is calculating.
It's like, have we got time to bone? Have I got time to seduce you, then bone you?
Cut to the slaver bros.
Yeah, so meanwhile, the slave traders are plotting to take Susan and Barb.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Barb and Ian, in fact.
Well, Barb and Vicky, they don't know about Ian yet. But...
Sorry, Susan. Susan.
Oh, that's so sad.
It's like the Doctor's moment, where he's like, Susan, can you come do this dial?
Oh, that's so sad. Anyway, so yeah, they're plotting and they're feeding their slaves who are, like, just chained up outside.
Mm-hmm.
Cut back to the house.
Ian and Barb are fucking pissed.
They are getting tipsy. And
like, they are on the edge.
They are maybe one chalice of wine from an unwanted pregnancy. They seriously kid and flirt constantly. Then Ian hears a sound.
Yeah.
And Bob doesn't, but Kablamatron enter the Slaver Bros.
Yeah.
Ian heroically tries to rescue Bob, but she stupidly knocks him over the head, and they're both abducted. Actually, one thing we should mention, it's not important, well, but it will bookend.
Yeah.
The joke, the fridge joke.
Okay, yeah, we should mention that. Well, also, Barbara bashing Ian over the head is displayed as a joke.
Oh, yeah, and there's so much slapstick in this whole thing.
It is funny.
Yeah, it is actually funny.
But, yeah, so how did the fridge joke go?
It
says, oh, this wine needs a little ice.
Yeah.
And, like, Barb says, oh, why don't you go and get some from the fridge?
And he starts walking towards, I guess, the kitchen.
And then goes, oh, you got me.
You got me.
Come right here.
They're not going to... Anyway, yeah. So the Slaver Bros turn up, Ian gets bashed over the head by Bob, and then they are both kidnapped.
Unintentionally.
Yeah, unintentionally.
Which will lead to some heavy flirting later.
Oh my god. So then, meanwhile, Doc and Vicky, henceforth referred to as VD, have found...
Oh, don't do that.
Okay, sorry. All right, fine.
DVT?
DVD?
Doc and Vicky Troop. DVT?
DVT? All right, fine.
Whatever. Doc and Vicky.
Doc and Vicky.
They're walking along, they're on their way to Rome, and they find a dead guy in the bushes.
They find the troubadour.
Yeah.
The dead troubadour. And they also see a centurion clearly looking for said dead dude.
Which, actually, the doctor knew. Or
yeah.
He claims to have.
Oh, but, I mean, it was obvious. It was obvious. He's looking in the bushes for what? Obviously, the dead guy in the bushes, right?
Yeah.
But instead of...
If he was actually looking for the guy alive, he wouldn't be looking in the bushes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But instead of, like, just dialing 911 and telling him that there's been, like, a 487 in the bushes, Doc poses as the troubadour, whose name is Maximus Petulian.
Why was he doing that, other than looking for a little bit of...
fun. An adventure.
A little bit of fun, yeah.
I think that's it.
That is it.
And he is to be taken with Vicky, who is smiling. She is grinning ear to ear, even though she... Like... Even though she just saw a freshly murdered geriatric musician. Okay. They are to be taken to see Nero himself.
To be honest, like, she's like this all the way through the story. I think she's cold from the death of her pet. You know, she is
really? Sandy?
Yes.
The Bukkake monster?
Yeah, she...
If it hadn't been for the death of the Bukkake monster, she'd be a complete human being, but now she's not.
Well, since Sandy died, she's just lost touch with her emotions.
Sandy was just her... conscience.
Yeah.
And a slow-moving, legless, vegetarian conscience. All right.
And Barb killed it.
With a flare. All right, so, cut to the slavers. They sell Ian and another slave to some dude.
Yeah.
And
but Barb, it turns out, is so valuable that she needs to be auctioned.
Yeah, she's going to be taken to Rome and... Well, yeah, basically, Jan, to use the traditional Aztec pronunciation, is going somewhere else.
Is it Jan or Ian?
Oh, is it Ian? Ian, sorry. My apologies to all the Aztecs listening. So anyway, cut to, this is now the end of episode one, where the centurion is manhandling the aforeseen murderer, and essentially revealing that he had hired this guy to slay the troubadour, because
yep.
Nero, being an amateur musician himself, pays handsomely to have better musicians than him taken out.
Yeah.
The murderer is then hired to kill the doc, who is with the centurion. Oh, by the way, guys, the murderer has no tongue.
Well, we'll find that out right now.
He is the least cunning linguist in the Roman Empire.
Yeah, but we do get a good explanation of that. So, episode two, all roads lead to Rome.
I've heard that phrase somewhere.
For a second there, I thought you were serious.
I know this phrase! I have heard this phrase many times. All right, let's do this.
So the tongueless guy is sent back in to kill the doctor by the centurion. Because the centurion believes that tongueless man has simply failed in his task to kill the lyre player.
Yeah. And says if he fails again, he will lose more than just his tongue. So this centurion is badass.
Yeah. So the tongueless guy comes up behind the doctor. He wants to stab him in the back, essentially. But the doctor, like a cat, is ready for him.
He Jackie Chans this tongueless idiot. wouldn't believe.
But immediately starts laughing. Like, all the way through the fight, he's laughing.
Yeah. And but super physical, by the way.
He's untouchable as a fighter, actually. Like, he seriously is. He's unplayable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's not really, like, it's not action. It's not the kind of action sequence that we've seen in, for instance, Prehistoric Earth. Or Aztec country. Like, this is slapstick action.
Yeah.
Like, he's just throwing him around, and it's all kind of Humpty Dumpty-esque.
Until he's thrown out the window.
Yeah, Vicky turns up, raises a vase, because, like, oh my god, the doctor's being attacked! And the tongueless dude literally just falls out of a window to his death.
Yeah.
At which point, Vicky starts smiling again, laughing, and everything's like, oh, this is so great! And the doctor even says, like, oh...
She has a social disorder.
Oh, yeah.
She does.
She is missing something.
Yeah.
So... And it's more than just a pet. She is missing, like, a grain of humanity.
But upon victory, there is a great soundbite from the Doctor.
Yeah, so we've got a soundbite.
Soundbite.
You know, I am so constantly outwitting the opposition, I tend to forget the delights and satisfaction of the arts, the gentle art of fisticuffs.
I realize you're a man of many talents, Doctor, but I didn't know fighting was...
My dear, I am one of the best.
Yeah. There you go. So now they're just joking about the whole thing, and Vicky cannot stop laughing. She is a child. This is what I said before. She is a child.
I took it to be sadistic.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, okay, fine.
Children are sadistic, but I guess I just took her for a sadist. Sure. So the Doctor has worked out the Centurion must have hired the assassin.
Yeah, and even though there's just been an attempt on his life, possibly their lives, he sends Vicky to her room on her own and goes to sleep just as though nothing had just happened.
Well, they both think it's hilarious, and the Doctor doesn't actually consider it a threat.
How can he not consider it a threat?
He's just like, oh, assassins, they're everywhere in the room. Like, why did he have no tongue? Oh, yeah, they did that. They didn't want to be denounced, so they just, like, cut their tongues out.
Fine.
It's fine.
Anyway.
I'll fight them all off.
Hombre, cut to Rome, where Bob and another woman are put into a cell, and the slaver tells Bob that he's to give her, like, some new clothes, so she'll look, quote-unquote, special at the auction, because she's clearly going to be sold as a bang toy.
Yeah.
And her new friend has a cough.
Well, no, she like, it's a little bit more than a bang toy. She's, like, she's sexy but classy as well. She's like a high rent hooker. You know?
She's an escort.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
She's a courtesan.
She's like a pretty thing you put in the corner.
Fine.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. All right. Anyway, so her new friend has a cough and is, like, practically leprous, and Bob, like, just starts taking care of her in a way, and
she's very, very kind, which becomes relevant.
Yeah, she's also, by the way, clearly had a, like, nice girl chat with this woman, and has not shut up about her crush on Ian.
No.
Because Coffey McGillicuddy marvels at what an exotic name Ian is. I've made the note here, I wonder if that'll come into play later on. Yes, it will. Uh-huh. So then, Bob stares longingly out the window, dreaming of Ian. Fade to a galley.
Fade to Ian in a slave ship. Yeah, a galley.
Yeah, a galley.
And there is water flying about everywhere. It's really hard work.
It's crazy hard work.
Yeah.
That must be, like, the worst ever.
But Ian, like, man that he is discussing with another slave an escape plan.
Yeah, he is great escaping constantly. They see land close by, and he just all of a sudden decides, you know what? We'll get a great escape.
Yeah.
Doesn't he tell his friend, his, like, coal galley slave buddy, but what the plan is?
Seems to instinctively understand.
Yeah, he gives him a signal, at which point...
To be fair, it's not much of a plan.
At which point his buddy pretends to die, the galley master turns up to inspect the body, Ian fails to take the galley master down, and the galley master...
He just says you'll have to do better than that, and then carries on.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, they were famous for being really, like, just nice blokes, right?
Who? Like, galley masters. Slave trade?
Yeah, I mean, if you tried to escape, that was fine, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just, like, all part of the job, really.
Exactly.
Like, water off a duck's back.
Precisely. Anyway, cut back to the cell where a man named Tavius... come back to the cell where a man named Tavius, who's like a dead ringer for Telly Savalas, wants to buy Bob.
Yeah.
You know what he looks like? Okay, he looks like Telly Savalas because he's bald. Right?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah, I refer to him constantly as Kojak.
Oh, and the skin colour. Like, he's got the skin tone of Telly Savalas.
Okay, fine. I feel like he looks like some sort of transporter accident between Telly Savalas and the captain from the rebooted Battlestar Galactica. All right, fine. Anyway, Kojak, he is there to buy Bob.
Yep.
and but she won't have it, and the slaver says that she's bound for the public auction anyway, so obviously Kojak's going to be there, right?
Yeah, he can come along and auction if he wants.
Yeah. So anyway, cut back to the ship. There's a storm.
Yep, and the rowing's gotten even worse.
Yeah.
Basically.
And the, like, it's hit by a huge wave, the galley master falls over, all of the slaves, like the compadres, just team up and collectively Jason Statham him.
Yeah, everything's going to hell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But now also they're sort of free on a sinking ship, essentially. Yeah. Cut back to Rome again, where VD have a brief chat about the Doc's decision to play the lyre, an instrument he cannot play, before Emperor Nero, a man known throughout history as a complete maniac. And then they leave frame just in time for the slave auction in the background to progress and Barb to be brought up on stage.
Which is a common trope in this episode.
Yeah, this happens constantly.
Like, essentially, this whole episode is the Doctor turning up in places, things happening to Ian and Barb behind him, and him not noticing.
Yeah, or like them talking about how far away they are,
yeah.
Then leaving frame, and the person they just referred to entering frame, not having seen each other.
Yeah, it's comical, but I think it's meant to be comical.
I think so as well. It's definitely meant to be comical, but I do think that it's also overused in this story.
Yeah, it is.
Absolutely.
It is a little. It all sort of builds up to one big punchline, which isn't very punchy.
No. Not really.
We'll get to that.
Anyway, so
Bard's being auctioned.
Yeah, there are only women for sale, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is not the type of auction where you buy a gardener or a servant.
That's okay.
This is not eBay, this is Craigslist Casual Encounters. So... bidding starts on Barb at 500, then Kojak turns up and buys her for 10 large.
Yeah. Which, obviously, we have no idea, like, what those units of currency mean, but I assume 10 large is a lot, because everybody gasps and is like, shit.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in general, like, wait, hang on, you wouldn't maybe up from 500 to 10 grand? You would go 600.
I thought 500 was considered a derisory bid. He thought that that was a joke.
Sure,
when he said 500. Like, he actually started the bidding at, like, 2,000 or something.
That's true. Actually, wait, hang on, let's have a little financial conversation here. If we just rewind the proceedings, the slave trader boys, the slaver bros, they, before setting off to Rome, before selling Barb and Ian, they met some other guy. This is totally peripheral, which is why we didn't mention it. They met some other dude who wanted to buy both of them. Yeah. I think the guy who actually bought Ian. And they say, how much would you pay for them? And he said, 700. And they go, each. And he just laughed at them.
Yeah.
So 700 per slave would be a fair price, according to these slaves. Slave traders.
Okay. So, all right.
So 10 grand.
That does put it in context.
Crazy amount of money.
Yeah, that does put it in context.
Anyway, well, Bob actually looks flattered.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, you 10 grand?
And also, you know, like, well, she's a history teacher. She knows if she's worth 10 grand, she's going somewhere pretty decent.
Yeah.
Like, the life of a 10 grand slave is, like, incomparable to a 700 slave.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So clearly she's going somewhere nice. Kablamo, cut to a desert island where Ian and Delos is his name, I think?
Delos, I had.
Delos, sure. Yeah. They're basically like Robinson and Fridaying on the beach. And Delos or Deros Friday checks his GPS and finds that they must be close to Rome. Mm-hmm. So they head off to save the woman who is now almost 100% sure to be Ian's love interest. blam, back to Kojak's pad.
He turns out to be quite a nice guy.
Yeah, he's a super nice dude.
Yeah, like, he's telling her, yeah, I know it's shit being a slave, but, like, this isn't so
this
bad
is a nice
comparatively.
Place. And literally the only reason I picked you was because I saw how nice you were being to Coffee McGillicuddy.
Yeah.
So, like, he wants her for her personality. Whilst explaining this to her, did you not also notice that he was constantly trying to touch her up?
No, I didn't, actually.
He
he had nothing but good intentions.
Well, then later on it turns out he only has good intentions, but whatever.
Seems like a sweet man to me.
He also does tell her that she is to remain a slave. She's not free, but now that she lives in, bing bong bing, Nero's house, she'll have a better life. So, wait, what? Kojak is the Emperor's flatmate. That's my note here.
Well,
but it turns out like he is like the head slave buyer.
He works for Nero.
Exactly.
And he... apparently does know Nero's taste very well. Mm. Because when Nero sees Barb, like...
Oh my god.
We'll talk about it. That needs its own discussion.
Absolutely. Anyway.
Tabius starts speaking with the Doctor, who he thinks at this point is the lyre player.
Exactly.
Else does.
Yeah, outside, this is again the same thing. Like, oh, we've got Maximus Petillion has just arrived.
Yeah.
Yeah, send him in. Oh, wait, actually, hang on, I'll meet him outside. So, like, very nearly he meets Barbara, like, the Doctor and Barbara meet,
yeah, okay.
But not really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, they chat. Kojak speaks to him suspiciously, says that there was trouble, but I took care of it.
Yeah.
He's in the...
The doctor just plays along.
Exactly. He's in the apoditarium, and there's clearly some sort of plot going on, which the doctor must feign knowledge of.
Yeah.
Wherefore he doesn't find out anything.
Well, so that, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so then Nero pops up.
He can appear to be this liar player to all concerned.
Exactly.
So enter Nero, who is a fat, burping, meat-eating, off-the-bone, greasy slob.
Yeah, he is not at all like the Nero I, imagine.
Well, I imagine, a maniac.
Yeah, I imagine someone far more sadistic.
Yeah, but, when I think of Nero, or generally people from history who are sadistic, I imagine them a bit slicker than that. I thought Nero was, a slick guy.
Yeah, like a psycho. A total psycho.
Yeah.
Not, a buffoon.
No,
It seems, actually, as though his wife has more... obviously, she has more sense, but she seems to have more control, almost, in some sense.
I mean, I think they display quite well Nero is, he's very into himself. He's very, he likes to self-aggrandize.
Absolutely. He's basically the Doctor.
Which is,
yeah, we're going to get to that as well.
Which is absolutely true. I think that's accurate to history, but I wasn't expecting such a fat slob, to be perfect.
Exactly. Anyway, so he and the Doc, they have kind of a liar-off.
That's the exact term I used.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They have a liar-off.
They had a liar-off.
Nice. Great minds, dude.
Which is the shittest liar-off that could ever be conducted.
The Doc basically pretends to pretend he can't play as well as Nero can. Right?
Yeah, which is actually pretty clever.
Super clever.
It is actually
and thinks that he's gotten away with it. Nero leaves frame, and then Vicky goes, "Well, I hope you play as well as that. I hope it goes as well when you play with him the next time." He's like, "Huh?"
I must say, I got away with that rather well. No, not really.
Not really. Back in the city, anyway, Ian and Friday have arrived, and Ian says Friday didn't have to come along, but Friday replies, I've got a quote here. Oh, I'm just going to jinx it by telling you we've been so lucky thus far. we're clearly going to make it through this unscathed. No fame, no cut. They're just instantly arrested by a couple of centurions. Cut to the apoditarium.
It is as though the centurions have a radar for irony.
Jinx.
Irony radar.
We're picking up hashtags all over the place. Anyway, so cut to the apoditarium. That's changing room to you and me, by the way, where Doc recycles an old joke from episode 1 of The Sensorites and saying he's not the curious type. Bing, bow, he finds the dead body of the centurion who hired the assassin in the first place behind a curtain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so after Ian's been captured, we cut back to him after that. And it turns out he's going to fight in the arena as a gladiator.
Yeah.
I think is a perfect casting role for Ian.
Oh, totally. This is him in Aztec Country all over again.
I kind of think the only reason to cast this guy was to make him a centurion.
Oh, right? My God.
I'm sorry, not a centurion, a gladiator.
A gladiator.
He's the perfect gladiator.
Yeah. Sorry, Russell Crowe.
The note I made was, I always knew he had it in him.
That's what she said.
Cut to some stock footage of lions.
Yeah, wait. That's exactly my note as well. But wait, not just that. He is put in the cell next to Coffee McGillicuddy. And so very clearly, he is going to be referred to by name, as in addressed by name, by Friday. She's going to hear it. And, tell him all about Bob. Yeah, spoiler alert, that is about to happen. But yeah, as you said, we get some stock footage.
Dun, dun, dun!
As, by the way, Ian, and this is my note, we get some stock footage as Ian and Friday realize they'll be fighting lethal, hungry, regularly fed domesticated lions who were freaking obviously filmed at London Zoo.
To be honest, I thought the weakness of the stock footage they had of the lions was that it was so variable in quality.
Yeah.
There was actually some really good quality footage of lions, which really fit the scene.
Mm.
Then there was some really long distance, grainy 1920s shots.
Yeah, but we see clearly it's the lion habitat at London Zoo because behind the lions we've got actually professionally sawed planks.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. Anyway, yeah, Kablamo, episode 3.
Episode 3, the conspiracy.
Conspiracy.
So the Doctor and Vicky are chatting, but they're interrupted by Tavius, who's talking to the Doctor about some shady dealings with a dead body.
Yeah.
Yeah. the doctor's still like, yeah, absolutely, yeah, I'll get right on that, yeah, death, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then goes
to Vicky, I think there might be a conspiracy.
What he says is, like, I think I actually wrote down the quote, he says, he's given yesterday's business a lot of thought. Wait, oh, so you mean the whole business of the attempted murder, the subsequent ruthless slaying of said assassin, and the discovery of a dead body in the dressing room? I am surprised you even gave that a second thought, Doc. Anyway.
But at this point, the Doctor tells Vicky they must not interfere with the course of history, they must not stop anything happening.
Yeah.
It's like one of his rules.
Oh, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, if you're interested, 2 minutes and 55 seconds into this episode, we get our first boom mic shot of the show.
Really?
Yeah, boom mic pops into frame.
You are totally going to have to caption that.
Screenshot, yeah. Check it out. All right, so Nero chats with his bird.
Nero is very excited about the Doctor playing the liar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And she suggests that Maximus Petillion play at her banquet that evening.
Mm-hmm.
So the Doc basically has a day to learn how to play the liar. Enter Kojak and Bob, who in this episode actually looks pretty good, is my note.
Oh, she does. I thought she looked good throughout.
Yeah, absolutely. She's
her
wearing
hair has come down like half a peg.
Dude, like, she's wearing dresses, she's less curmudgeon, and her hair is actually finally under control.
Yeah, it's like a normal, it's no longer a weave.
Needless to say, Nero is instantly bona fide. And then,
but to be fair, she's looking good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he leaves to catch up with Maximus Forgetimus. And Bob is to serve as Nero's
attendant.
Like, Nero's wife's new attendant. Like, he is...
Yeah.
She is the wife's slave. What's her name again?
Which?
Nero's wife?
Oh, it's...
Poppaea or something.
Yeah.
I think Poppaea. Anyway.
Okay. So, Nero's immediately very taken with Barb.
Oh,
he's,
totally.
Like, leching over her, like, from minute one.
Yeah. But, wait, hang on.
The wife instantly doesn't like
him. Oh, that's what I was going to say. We get a little bit of an interlude between wife... Fucking hell. Poppaea? Poppaea. Not Poppaea. Poppaea and Barbara Greathair. They have a chat in which the wife basically says, listen, I like being the Empress, and if you have any ambition to become the Empress, because she's seen how her husband got an instant erection. Right?
Yeah, I'm going, like, to fucking cut you.
I will. Exactly. Yeah. I will kill you. Like, but you are the Empress.
Yeah.
Surely you can do more than just tell this person off. If your husband, the Emperor, is attracted to some other woman and your, like, status, your social status depends on those two not doing it,
but
then, like, just send her away.
I would imagine she gets a lot of that. He seems like the sort of guy who might be leching on quite a few people. Like, what's she going to do? Kill every woman he comes in contact with?
That's actually a good point. Well, she could say, I only want male servants.
Yeah.
Or I only want eunuchs or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Nero, being a fucking bumbling buffoon that he is, probably wouldn't even notice the difference.
Yeah, exactly.
But he pretty much immediately... So after this conversation, we immediately cut to a scene of Nero starting to play Kiss Chase.
Oh, he is so rapey.
Involuntary Kiss Chase.
So rapey. He chases her around.
I'm coming after you.
Loses her,
you
then stumbles upon Vicky. He stumbles upon Vicky, gets another boner, falls over, is laughed at by Vicky, which, by the way, is totally fine, apparently. And then he runs away, and there are no repercussions for either Barbara or Vicky.
Why would there be repercussions for Barbara?
Dude, he wants to fuck her. She does not want to be fucked by him. He is the Emperor. He can snap his fingers or just twist his thumb downward, and she will do whatever he says.
But you know what rapists are like. They love the chase.
Are you saying anticipation is everything?
He loves all of this. Like,
oh,
he wants
God.
Her to scream.
Oh, this is so disgusting. Actually, no, I don't think so. I don't think so, because he's treating this as a game. Like, he is constantly laughing. So that... Okay, fine. We got to progress. So, we've got tons of really quick cuts. I'm just going to shoot through these.
Right.
So we get to something more
substantial. But Nero bumps into the Doctor, who basically halts his progress for just a little bit before quickly getting back on Barb's tail.
Yeah.
But the Doc just laughs.
Yeah. Okay,
like,
so... Wait, dude. This is it. So,
fine.
This is the sequence of cuts. Vicky meets an old woman. We don't find out who she is just yet.
Yeah.
Nero's still trying to rape Bob. Bob runs past Doctor, who doesn't see her. And then Nero bumps into Doc, but leaves ASAP. Why even include Doc in that scene, by the way? Bob, in a perfect reenactment of every single Scooby-Doo episode ever, accidentally starts chasing after Nero.
Yeah.
Then goes, oh my god, Shaggy. Turns 180.
Yeah,
and then runs
past
an oblivious doc again.
Yeah.
Boom. Back to Vicky.
Now, the Doctor, all the Doctor knows, he doesn't know it's Barbara. Like, that's part of the whole
thing. Oh, yeah. No, you're going to make a great point here.
He knows that, somebody is being raped. Like, he's chasing after somebody to rape
yeah.
them.
There is
a screaming woman.
There is no doubt about it.
And he's just laughing and actually says, ha-ha, what an extraordinary fellow.
In a really positive way.
It is the weirdest judgment of anyone ever.
Isn't it great to meet these interesting characters from history?
Oh, so weird.
Mustn't interfere.
Anyway, so...
this could be a very important rape. A historically significant rape.
Yeah, exactly. Let's not interfere. Yeah, prime directive. So we're back with Vicky.
Yeah, Vicky's chatting with some lady.
Yeah.
Locusta. Yeah. Who turns out to be Nero's official poisoner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome job. She must be so busy.
Yeah, and she's... Well, that's what she says. She's cooking up poison, and, like, she's cooking up poison for this person, that person, that person. Yeah. It just all comes back and forth. She explains to Vicky that poisoning is a very accepted part of Roman society. Everybody wants to kill everyone else, and it's just... She gets loads of work.
Yeah.
Nobody really blames her for making the poison. She just gets loads of work.
Yeah, we end the scene between those two with her holding up a bubbling vial, nay, a carafe of poison, and wonders who will have the honour of drinking it.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know, lady, but it's going to be someone pretty stupid, because that is clearly poison.
But then my next note is, cut back to light-hearted music and further rape attempts.
Yeah.
It's so light-hearted.
Yeah, it's Nero finally catching up with Bob.
He catches her, yeah.
Yeah, he chases her around the room, just like the mountain rapist in Marinus.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly like that.
It is almost an exact reenactment of that.
Yeah. Anyway, so they end up on the bed, then Poppea turns up in flagrante delicto.
No, before she turns up, the Doctor comes in. He's looking for Nero. Remember this?
Oh, yeah, you're right!
The Doctor comes
totally
in.
You're totally right!
Sees that rape is occurring, because they're actually, he's trying to hump her.
Yeah,
and he's like, oh, I'm interrupting. And leaves.
Yeah, Nero just goes, Maximus, get out of here! Instead of going, guards, kill him.
Yeah.
Which I think would be more realistic, to be honest.
To be fair, he does want to see the liar player before he murders him, right?
Okay, that is true.
He wants to see whether he's any good. Like, he really respects the liar thing.
Okay, that is true.
He will want to kill him.
Even though, I've got to say, hang on, small parenthesis here. He knows that this dude, Maximus Potilion, Maximus Facimus, he knows that he is famous throughout the Empire as, the greatest liar player ever.
Yeah.
And he probably also knows that he is not the greatest player himself. Why would he want to put himself in that situation?
I think he doesn't know that he isn't the greatest liar player himself. He believes his own lies. He's on such a power trip. Nero is on such a power trip.
Okay, let's...
He believes he's the greatest at everything.
So, dude, let's pretend that this episode of Doctor Who was directed by Ridley Scott. Nero is being played by Joaquin Phoenix, and the Doctor is played by Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
Here's what would happen. Nero would break the Doctor's wrist and then go play.
Yeah.
That's what he would do. He wouldn't take the risk. He would, make him suffer and then make him play. And when he didn't play well enough, he would cut his hands off or something.
Which emperor is Joaquin Phoenix again? It's,
I don't know.
Son of Marcus Aurelius.
Yeah.
I can't remember which one he is.
I can't remember.
I'm having a mind freeze.
Yeah, me too.
But anyway, is it not possible that Nero's character is different?
High five! First doesn't matter of the show.
Hey! How long did it take? Like an hour?
50 minutes. All right. Okay, so, anyway.
So, as you said, the wife walks in.
Yeah, in flagrante delicto, he pretends that, she's been chasing him around.
Yeah, my comment was, typical rapist, she was asking for it.
Yes! Oh, nice!
Totally justified.
Such a good comment, dude.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then we see a super-duper quick cutscene from the cells, where Ian learns from Coffee McGillicuddy that Bob has been sold.
Yep.
And then we cut back to the palace where the Doc and Nero are enjoying a schwitz.
I didn't get this.
Maybe. Yeah, they're having a schwitz. No, they're in the sauna.
Maybe you can explain this to me. I must have missed something.
Okay.
But they're in the sauna. They're in the sauna. Yeah. It's all steaming up nicely. They're having, like, a little rest.
Yeah.
And a bloke comes in and pours hot water on Nero.
Yeah, it's the same...
Who was that?
It's the same dude who... there's a scene... Sorry, actually, we've already gone past that. Where when Nero is... attempting to catch up with Bob so that he can fuck her.
Mm-hmm.
This same dude turns up and, like, tries to lift up his cape or whatever, his toga, because he's, like, the personal servant.
Yeah.
And when he comes into the schwitz, all he wants to do is, like, just clean his master's feet. So he pours hot water on his feet.
On his bollocks?
No, on his feet. But he...
I thought it was actually on his groin.
Oh, really? Oh, maybe it was. I thought it was on his feet.
Screenshot it.
We'll screenshot yes. it. But Nero, he was asleep, so he gets startled, mm-hmm. pulls a sword, and the doctor basically saves this dude's life by, like, standing between Nero and said dude, who's now being apprehended by guards, and saying, like, yeah, you should just leave, never come back.
Okay,
and
fine.
Then, like, commending Nero on how he acted.
Yeah, the doctor does well in this situation.
He does super
but,
well.
My question was, it's just an innocent mistake, is it? By
yeah, yeah. I think it's the same kind of mistake as when he picks up the toga. Nero just goes, oh, for fuck's sake, just leave, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to rape this woman. and he just goes, oh, I'm sorry, all right, and he leaves. That's it.
Okay, fine. So the doctor actually tells Nero that he thinks there's some sort of intrigue
yeah.
afoot.
But learns nothing.
No, but he's sort of gaining Nero's confidence all the time.
Very much so.
He's, you know, he's really buttering him up, telling him he's the greatest, and Nero's buying it.
Yeah.
And Nero actually invites the doctor at this point to the banquet.
Yeah, to play.
And says that he'll have a fantastic audience. It's
yeah.
going to be the best audience possible.
We then get a cutscene, which, given our conversation before we press record, I think you're going to say we need to screenshot. This is Vicky overhearing Poppaea buying poison for Barb. She doesn't know it's for Barb, but she knows that
All right.
Nero's wife wants to poison somebody.
So what happens essentially is, the wife is buying some poison off Poison Lady.
Yeah.
Why is Vicky hiding under the table?
No idea.
Like, what?
This is not explained.
Like, what?
Poison Lady doesn't know that Vicky's, like, not meant to be in there or something.
Well, like
there's
Vicky,
no reason.
Vicky and Poison Lady were talking happily earlier. Like,
yeah,
why
totally.
Is she now hiding under the thing? Like, what?
Yeah, there's no explanation given. Doesn't matter.
But anyway.
Shit, now we're number two. Doesn't matter.
When she emerges.
I opened the floodgates.
When she emerges from the table, she gives a completely inexplicable face.
Screenshots.
At the time, I was kind of like, I actually think that is the worst piece of acting I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
She like, stands up out of the table and, like, does, like, some sort of cartoonish grin with, like, eyebrows, like, all
yeah.
over the place. And also smiling. Right?
She, yeah, but this...
She's, like, really happy, intrigued, and confused all
yeah,
at the
but,
same time.
You know what? I'm going to say this is down to directing, not so much her, because the director could just have gone, Vicky, you don't know how to act. Just stay out of frame. Or he could have just said, or she could have said, I have no idea, let's face it,
well,
probably a man. He could have said, dudette, listen, just look sad. But probably said, okay, I want you to then turn your head, look at the camera, and give us the kind of facial expression as though you've just been, I don't know, anally fingered by a porcupine.
So,
boom, go for it.
So,
and then she interprets it really weirdly.
Random and completely uncool reference. But have you, do you remember that episode of Friends? Where Joey is giving an acting class. And, like, obviously the joke is, Joey is a ridiculously bad actor.
This is where he teaches them how to cry on cue.
Well, he teaches them how to do certain faces, and he's going, yeah, if I want to look confused, I just try and divide 13 by 143.
Yeah.
And, like, he's got these eyebrows going all over the place. Like, it reminded me of that.
It was
comically bad.
Yeah, I'd like to quote Dylan Moran at this point. He says this of Irish people. They always have the same look on their face. He's Irish. He's allowed to say this. He says, they have the look on their face, and Vicky has the same look on her face. He says, it's as though someone has whispered in their ear, you've just won £10 million, and then someone else has whispered in their other ear, but you only have 2 minutes to live. God, fantastic stand-up, by the
excellent,
way, check it out.
Excellent.
Anyway, so, cut to banquet prep. Nero gives Bob a bracelet,
mm-hmm.
wants a kiss, but is interrupted again by the arrival of drinks, the same kind of cups that we saw the poison in before. Bob tries to, like, curtail this sort of subtle rapiness by proposing a toast to Nero's health and then downs the whole cup. The whole cup. And then Vicky tells the doctor off-screen, like, just outside the room, so Bob doesn't see him. Bob runs out, by the way. And then Vicky tells the doc she switched the cups around.
No, yeah, but she's, like, again, ridiculous thing. She's so casual about it. I mean, has she ever murdered anyone before? And she's just, like, she just brings it up as if it's, like, an interesting aside. Oh, yeah, I think I just poisoned Nero.
Yeah.
Like, it's just nothing to her.
Yeah, I know. It's
she's so cold.
It's ridiculous.
The death of Sandy has just, like, destroyed
her. I think she's now got it on her brain that, wait, hang on, she can fuck with history, and she is going to. That's, she wants to leave a mark, basically.
Well, and she's seen that Nero is not a particularly nice character.
That's true. But, okay, check this out. Here's another weird thing. So there were two cups of wine. One is poisonous, right? The poison maker lady, whatever, she has them on a table next to each other. They look identical.
Yeah.
Vicky just switches places between them. So what is this poison lady thinking? Like, what is going through her mind? Is she saying, all right, so I'm going to put these two cups. They already have wine in them. One of them is poisonous. They look completely identical. In approximately, let's make it 3 hours, we have a banquet. Let's just leave the cups as they are, get maybe, how, let's say, 5 middlemen to handle these cups, and then make sure that the right one happens to be placed in Nero's hand. Oh, in Barbara's hand. That is ridiculous. That is so ridiculous. Any project manager will frown at this. They'll just go, listen, no, you want the poison in a separate vial, and you want to bring it to Bob in a different way. That's it. Also, what was fucking Popeye thinking? Like, have Bob poisoned in front of everyone? That would just cause a scene.
No, it would cause a scene, but nobody would really think anything of it. As explained, poisoning's a very commonplace thing, and it's fine. It's socially acceptable.
Yeah, okay, fine. We're going to continue this conversation, and I predict approximately 3 minutes. Anyway, in the meantime, so Vicky tells Doc that she switched the cups around.
Yeah.
The Doc goes, no, but dude, seriously, prime directive, runs to Nero, who is about to down his drink, assuming that that is the drink with the poison, assuming correctly, by the way, tells Nero that it's full of poison, and then immediately leaves frame.
Yep.
Nero gives said poison cup of wine to his, buddy.
Yeah, like, he's just like, try this, and he falls over dead.
Immediately. E-freaking-mediately. Okay. Cut to, Popeye has the poison lady arrested for incompetence, and then cut to, this is what I said, what I was going to say, cut back to the fucking banquet where the attempted murder has done nothing to quench Nero's thirst, because he is sipping wine and eating grapes and meat and shit as though it's going out of fashion. Everything could be poisoned, dude. Everything. God, I'm so angry.
It's just a part of life. It's just a part of Roman life. God. There was one thing we missed. There is a terrific soundbite from Nero. It's one of the creepiest lines I have heard all year.
What is it?
He goes up to Barb and he says, close your eyes and Nero is going to give you a rather big surprise.
Oh, I know. Oh, that's so good. That's when he gives her the bracelet.
Yeah, that's when he gives her it's the ring, wasn't it? He gave her a ring.
I think it's a bracelet. It's like, it doesn't matter.
We go. It sounded like it was his Johnson.
You said Johnson. Nice. Anyway, so the doc is made to play and he is inspired by the Emperor's new clothes. I made this note before he even said it. It's so incredibly obvious. He says very loudly, only people with a very keen hearing or musical perception will be able to hear these notes.
Yeah.
And then he fake plays, not emitting a single sound, and everyone just applauds. But, surprisingly, not Nero.
What do you mean? Nero? Yeah. Like, Nero believes it so much. Like, like, when the Doctor starts playing, Nero's, like, going along with it. He's, like, bouncing along to the music a little bit. Then he turns to one of his attendants. He's like, yeah, he's okay, but he's not that great. And then the Doctor gets a tremendous round of applause for this fake silent music he plays.
Yeah.
Nero goes outside. He's so pissed off by how good the Doctor is that he's like, I've got to kill him. Like, I simply have to kill him.
He says he has a plan and he's going to put the operation in, like, he's going to put it into operation ASAP.
Yeah.
And then he leaves with Bob.
It's a really interesting thing. Like, as I was watching, I was thinking, okay, this maybe is a little bit pants, that he's just not playing it at all. But, you know, it's like a Darren Brown experiment.
It is.
Comes in, if one person believes it, everybody's like, oh yeah, it's amazing.
The Doctor, by the way, tells Vicky in the meantime, like after his quote-unquote performance, mm-hmm. he tells her, I was inspired by The Emperor's New Clothes. Do you know I gave H.C. Anderson that idea?
It was...
Yeah, I like it.
I think it's a great moment.
I love that. But yeah, so Nero's massively offended. He says he's going to put the plan into operation, and then he takes Bob with him to Gladiator High School, where he wants to arrange a fight. Oh, I wonder who that will be with. Yeah. Anyway, cut to Ian and Friday being told that they have to fight. Obviously.
Yeah, and it's quite touching.
Yeah. This is going to be point one of what in episode 4 is going to be added to massively. Okay, point one. Cut to Nero telling Sarcheria, who is, like, slaver bro number 2, right. The guy without the beard, that he is to put Maximus Arrogantus in the circus to be eaten by lions, the lions of London Zoo, right? And, by the way, my notice, it was called the Circus Maximus, after all. Hey.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this is point one. Sarcheria, he's just some slave trader. Now he fucking runs the circus?
Yeah, it's weird. And he's wearing, like, proper ceremonial garb as
well. He's like a head honcho all of a sudden. Weird.
It was like one of those moments where, I don't know, they reuse the same actor to play a different character.
Oh my god, yeah, that's my note later
Is he actually even meant to be the same character?
I don't know where I've made the note. He is basically...
I noticed that as well.
I think Sarcheria is basically just a placeholder Roman. Yeah. Like, we need an important Roman, dude. Shit, we didn't finish casting. Just put Sarcheria in this.
Because
he has, like, 7 different roles in this story.
He's got 2 different roles.
Hombre?
Like, because when we see him again later, he's the same guy as he is now.
Yeah, okay. Like, I don't mean roles. I mean, like, he has 7 different jobs.
Right.
He is
plot device.
Yeah, he is basically the most influential person in all of Rome, because he is the head of so many operations. Anyway.
Although, to be fair, when we initially saw him, he wasn't, like, head of anything. He was just a slave trader.
He was garbage.
Yeah.
He was human filth. He was nothing but vermin. He and Beardy Face. Nothing but vermin. He's the head of the Circus Maximus.
If we concoct an elaborate backstory, maybe Nero was so pleased with Barb. Like, he was so pleased Barb was brought in. This guy just got, like, promoted, like, promoted the fuck out of him, basically.
Dude, my mind just blew
everything.
Up. That makes perfect sense.
She's just that sexy.
Yeah, anyway, Friday and Ian, they are to fight before Barb and Nero. So now Ian and Barb have seen each other. Nero has noticed that Barb knows him. And
he notices that while Ian and Delos are fighting.
Yeah, okay, that's true. So they start fighting. Ian gets the upper hand, refuses to kill Friday.
Yeah.
And then Friday gets the upper hand, is about to chop Ian's head off.
Yeah. Barb screams.
Yeah, Nero puts thumb down. Cliffhanger, Kablamatron.
Inferno.
Part 4. Oh my god, what a great name for an episode. Seriously, it's such a fitting episode name as well.
Yeah, Inferno. The fire that's burning.
Oh, spoiler alert.
There is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Before we start with episode 4, can we just talk about how there's no hint of a barrier between the Emperor and the 2 angry and armed slaves?
Yeah.
Like, they are literally about to have a sword fight maybe 2 meters away from the Emperor of the Roman Empire.
So I was really excited when they said they were going to fight. I wasn't envisaging, like, a private fight. I thought it was going to be in, like, the Circus Maximus
with
thousands baying for blood.
Clearly all BBC could afford was, like, a small garage. Yeah. Like, oh, wait, we've got a storage cupboard. Turn it into the circus.
It's a private fight just for Nero and Bob.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Yeah.
He wants to flex his muscles in front of Bob. That's what it is. But there is no hint of a barrier. So, like, it's so dangerous. Like, it's so irresponsible of the Emperor. We're going to find out.
And it turns out he's brought along the shittest guards in the world as well.
Yeah, so, ladies and gentlemen, in case you haven't seen this episode, this is what happens. Friday refuses to kill Ian as well.
And
instead attempts to kill Nero, then kills a guard. They tussle with the guards. Mm-hmm. They both escape. No one chases after them, and instead Nero, who now knows that Bob's a friend of Ian's, instead of, like, telling them, get after them, he then kills a god. He kills one of the people.
Well, like, in another comic death moment, he looks as though he's about to kill Barb, and then, like, just stabs the guy behind
him. Yeah, and says, like, oh, he didn't fight well enough.
Yeah, he did. Well, and to be fair, he didn't.
No, he didn't.
He deserved to die.
None of the gods fought well enough. There's, like...
And there were not enough gods.
Dude, there were maybe four gods there, and they were nowhere near the Emperor. They were, like, backstage sipping tea. Oh, this is so stupid. Anyway.
It was pretty
stupid. God. Cut back to the palace where Poppaea is telling Kojak to get rid of Bob. And then then they split up. And then Bob meets up with Kojak and tells him all about Ian.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically just volunteers to help both of them. And, she also tells Kojak about how Maximus Forgetimus is going to be put in the Circus Maximus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well done. Good
Thanks.
Line. He's just extraordinarily helpful.
Throughout the entire episode, by the way, I was expecting there to be a joke about Circus Maximus.
Right.
Never came. Anyway, cut to Ian and Friday.
Yeah, cut to Ian and Friday. You go on.
Yeah, okay. So Ian says he's going to take a chapter from the Doc's book. By acting rashly and ignoring the dangers around him, essentially. That's if you read between the lines. He doesn't say that. But yeah, essentially. And then cut back to Doc and Vicky, who are looking at a map of Rome, which Vicky, by the way, correctly identifies as such. And then the Doc realizes, the fires of Rome are about to happen.
It's 64 AD.
64 AD.
Yeah, perfect.
Cabalamatron.
And the city is about to burn down.
Yeah. Then
wonder how that's going to happen.
Yeah. Then Kojak turns up and tells Maximus Insidious about the circus and finally reveals the plot that has been alluded to
in
the whole time.
The most expositional bit of script ever written.
Yeah, I know.
tells him in the slowest and clearest terms exactly what he said and what...
Kojak might as well be a Dalek. I mean, he just reveals everything. He says, the Doc is there to murder Nero.
Yeah. Don't you remember you said this? And then you said you were going to go and tell these people this?
Yeah, like, and that's how you're going to do it, which is why you need to do it today.
Yeah.
So then he leaves, and then Nero shows up to invite the Doc to play at the O2, and then basically the Doc kind of completes his sentences. Like, he says, I have a surprise for you. And he goes, oh, I know, you want me to play at the circus.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, what? Basically, they've turned into, like, the old married couples in the beginning and end of When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah.
Like, they are just constantly completing each other's sentences. And it turns into Pun City, because the Doc now knows that he is to be fed to the lions. And everything he says is just like, I hope it's a roaring success. Yeah. We'll give the audience something to really sink their teeth into. Oh my god. And then in the meantime, do the glasses and fire thing.
Well, in the meantime, the Doctor is holding his glasses, like somehow angling it from the sun down towards the plans of Rome.
Yeah. Is he doing this deliberately, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah, big
okay.
time. Well, we find out later that he was.
But that was unknowingly. Anyway.
No, I think he's doing this on purpose. Like,
okay.
He's trying to create a distraction. Like, he's fucking done for.
Yeah,
like, I don't know why he's laughing so much about it. He's in a really bad way. He's about to be thrown to the lions.
Yeah.
So this is like an attempt to...
Escape.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, an attempt to distract Nero.
That makes perfect sense.
So he sets the new plans for Rome on fire.
Ablaze.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
initially, Nero is obviously really very upset about this and sort of starts describing the ways he's going to mutilate them.
Oh my god, we should almost soundbite that. That is such a fantastically elaborate murder plan.
Yeah, it really is.
Shall we soundbite that?
Soundbite.
Soundbite.
I'll have you both killed over and over again. Gods! Fool, idiot, traitor, pig! Mistaken little arena on an island with water all round, and in the water there will be alligators, and the water level will be raised, and the alligators will get you.
Hope you like that.
But then, like, he starts calling the Doctor a genius, and he's like really happy.
Yeah, because he sees the map on fire.
Yeah, which gives him the idea that actually, like, I want all these new plans for the city. Maybe the best thing to do, so I don't have to go through the council, is just burn the whole place to the ground.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, this makes no sense whatsoever.
Inferno.
Yeah, this makes no sense whatsoever.
Why?
Okay, so check this out.
It does make sense.
No, it makes no sense. Okay, so check this out. All right. It makes no sense whatsoever for the following reasons. Number one, hombre, when the map is set ablaze, Nero really just acts as though this is the only copy of said plan there is. Because he immediately says, like, oh, several years of planning all gone to shit. Like, the destruction of this map means there is no plan for a new and improved Rome. There is no Rome 2.0, right?
Right. Yeah.
The only thing he now knows is that old Rome, Rome 1.0, is to burn to the ground. But he still needs to reinvest all that time into coming up with plans for Rome 2.0.
Well, surely he can remember a few of them. And also, because he now knows the city is going to be burned to the ground, his plan is surely going to change. Like, his changes can now be far more wide-reaching than were initially.
That is a fair point. You know what? I stand corrected, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we just shook hands on that. All right.
Cool.
Anyway, so now he praises the doc. He, like, proclaims him the genius, tells him he's going to make him rich beyond his wildest dreams, and sets him free, and which basically means that the doc has caused the Great Fire of Rome. So then, cut back to Ian and Friday, henceforth called If, sneaking into the palace among all these other people, like this crowd that's gathered.
Mm-hmm.
And here's now point 3 to the bullet point list. Subcheria, by the way, is... This is my note! Subcheria, by the way, is clearly like a placeholder Roman now. He is guarding the palace, looking for Ian, in charge of the Circus Maximus, and he is also in charge of the burning of Rome, because he is the guy there ferrying all the people who are... Spoiler alert, the people are there to burn Rome.
To be fair, he is a shady-looking guy. Oh. Like, he's a well-cast, shady Roman guy.
You know what? That's judging a book by its cover.
Yeah. what else do you do?
Dude, we've both worked in publishing. You should know better. Anyway.
He's a first-class Roman shady guy. It's fine.
Anyway, so then Nero, he throws coins at the slaves and says, there will be plenty more for you.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is...
burn the place to the ground.
Burn the city to smithereens, right?
Yeah.
Then,
meanwhile, Tabius has noticed Ian. And
Kojak.
And has pulled him out.
He spots Ian. How does he recognise him?
Why? Why not?
He's never seen Ian!
Has he never seen Ian?
Kojak has never seen Ian.
You've just blown my mind.
You're welcome. Kojak has never seen Ian, and he's just looking at this crowd of randomers who have clearly just been taken off the street to, like, burn shit. And just goes, you're Ian, right? He goes, yes, I am. Like, well, I thought so. You look like an Ian.
Is that for real?
Yeah, that is for freaking real. People, if I'm wrong, then please tweet me and tell me that I'm wrong. I think that I am right.
Do you know, like, you could be. I can't remember a moment's meeting before that. But, like, at the time, it seemed plausible that he knew Ian. But, yeah,
I don't think so.
Maybe you're right.
Yeah, so he sees Ian, spots him, says, all right, you're Ian, come with me, takes him to Bob. By the way, where the shit is Friday during all this?
Like, well, we see Friday in a minute.
In a minute, but in the meantime, like, Ian doesn't know how long it's going to be until he's reunited with Friday.
Friday's just enjoying the fire, like, picks one up.
Yeah, he picks up, like, a...
torch.
Torch, there you go, torch. That's the word. In the meantime, we see VD skulking outside, and, like, getting away with it, because the gods now know that he is a free man.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know who Vicky is, by the way, so it's... The gods must think, well, this guy's a free man... Not strange at all that this old man is with a apparently underage girl in the bushes. That's not strange at all. Carry on about your business.
Probably wasn't in Rome, to be fair. The city of vice.
Oh, you're right.
Like,
you're right. You're very right about that. Anyway, then cut back into the palace where, as the crowd disperses, the BFI, they escape, and Kojak's motive is finally revealed because... he is a Christian. My note here, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, I was gonna bring this up. It was really weird.
Mm.
It was just like...
It's so weird because it's like, oh...
Is that why he's good?
That's why he's good.
Is that what they're saying?
That's exactly what they're saying.
That's why he's a good guy, he's a Christian?
That's precisely what they're saying.
Yeah, right. So the crucifix thing really jarred. I mean, to be fair, I believe... Not that I've ever studied this era, but I believe that, like, Nero's era is considered, like, the first burgeonings of Christianity coming into the empire and becoming significant in the
empire. But, like...
Sure, they're still being thrown to the Romans, but... They're thrown to the lions. But, like, this is the start of the Christian era. So I guess it is historically right that maybe there was a Christian.
That's not my beef with this. Yeah,
the beef is he's a good guy because he's a Christian.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, there's too great an emphasis placed on the reason he does a good thing within the story. Why can't he just be a good guy?
Yeah.
Like, in fact, he could be just a good guy and a Christian. Or
He is a good guy, Andrew.
Yeah, but it is presented in such a way that he is clearly a good guy because he's a Christian. His final words are something like to the effect of, best of luck to you, my child.
Yeah.
Whilst cradling a crucifix in his hands.
He is essentially Jesus.
He is bald Jesus.
To be fair, Jesus was only, like, what, 30, 40 years ago?
Yeah.
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 This guy may have known Jesus.
Dude, he's an early adopter.
Yeah, he may have actually known Jesus.
He was into this whole Christianity business before it got popular.
Yeah.
All right, okay, so then cut to VD standing, in the forest, watching as one of the greatest cities in human history burns to the ground with the biggest smiles on their faces.
Doctor's
ever.
Laughing his fucking arse off.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
In fact, it runs, doesn't it? It goes from the Doctor laughing his arse off to Nero
exactly
laughing his arse off.
Exactly, my notes!
Like, essentially saying,
emphasizing
the doctor,
how
the
alike in madness
yes,
they are.
Yeah. They are essentially just as mad as each other.
Yeah, exactly.
They are both fiddling while Rome burns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so creepy. It's really creepy. This guy is, he's not a nice dude. Anyway, I have to take that back. I love the Doctor. All right, so, back at the house from episode one.
The reason he laughs, the reason he starts laughing. So
is because he realises that, I did cause this.
Vicky says, he's saying, oh no, I didn't cause anything, I didn't fuck with Prime Directive. And Vicky's going, no, you really did.
You totally did.
And then he thinks about it and goes, oh yeah, I did.
Yeah. And it's like a gradual fade to Nero playing his lyre and laughing.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
It's great. I love it.
I love it as well. It is fantastic. All right, so back to the house from episode 1. Bi arrive to find it empty. Yeah. And I've got a quote here. Bob says, surely the Doctor wouldn't have left without us.
Yeah.
What? Well, he fucking left you for Rome. He left for Rome without you 3 episodes ago.
He left his granddaughter in post-apocalyptic London with one shoe.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we are not getting over that fact. Yeah.
Never.
He left his granddaughter. He threatened to leave both Barbara and Ian on the next planet, wherever that may be.
Do you know what? I'm going to be talking about that when we review Matt Smith era Doctor.
Oh, same.
It's going to be fucking...
You know what we have to do?
Your granddaughter.
You know what we have to do?
What do we have
Spoiler
to do?
Spoiler alert. When we're done with Hartnell, mm-hmm. between Hartnell and Troughton, we're going to do a bonus episode about Hartnell anyway.
Yeah.
What we need to do is we need to list our favourite arsehole moments. the worst possible things the Doctor has ever done. Because they are aplenty.
Some nice theme music. Over it'll be a great laugh.
All right, so then we get the bookend of the fridge joke.
Yeah, well, we get the bookend of the fridge joke, and then we get Barb accidentally telling Ian it was her who bashed him over the head.
Yeah, and
they play kiss chase.
That's not the note I've made. The note I've made is they play kiss chase before. Okay, here's my note: flirty fridge joke. Then Barb lets slip that she hit him over the head, and suddenly he is a would-be wife-beater. Because he...
He's not truly upset.
Okay, he's not truly upset, but he literally goes, I am not cleaning any of this filth up. Picks her, chases her around, then threatens to, drown her.
Well, no, I think it's all in a flirty way.
Fine.
No, it's just like...
God, why do you have to turn this into shit over my jokes, man?
It's just punching, when you're 5 years old, punching a girl because you like her.
Okay,
you
fine.
Know?
Yeah, fine.
It's like, oh, you scamp, I'm going to wrestle you to the ground and fuck you.
Anyway, they fall asleep and the Doctor arrives just as they're about to wake up and give each other handjobs. And he assumes that they have just been idling the whole time.
Yeah, which is the punchline I referred to earlier for the whole episode.
I know.
Doctor,
failed.
They're just behind him the whole way and, he hasn't realised a thing.
You know what? I'm actually kind of upset by that.
Upset?
Like, yeah, I'm actually kind of upset that they don't get credit for all the stuff that they've been doing.
Surely, like, but in there, we do get a next scene after that.
Yeah, they still haven't told them anything.
Have they not told him anything?
As far as I know,
they are chatting casually at this point. Like, at that point, they weren't given a chance to get a word in edgeways.
Yeah.
The next scene, they're not talking about Ian and Barb's exploits. It's true. They're talking about
the next scene, by the way, takes place in the TARDIS, which, for all they know, like, for all they knew 2 minutes before, may have been stolen or burned as a false idol over a month ago. They have no idea.
But as we were mentioning before we press play on this episode, and it's just come to light now for me, this is the first episode where the Davis Principle doesn't apply.
I know.
They were always able to get in the TARDIS.
Yeah, but they it was
they chose not to.
It was self-imposed Davis.
No, they... you could call
because they got...
You could call anything in the world self-imposed Davis.
Okay, like, that is true. That is true.
They just decided to leave. The Doctor actually made a decision to go to Rome.
That's true.
To get a bit of air.
Ombre, you're totally right. Like, this is the first and hitherto only episode where that occurs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
And
they have a bit of a chuckle in the TARDIS, and then we get a sneak preview of the next episode because well, Barbara and Vicky leave, and then Ian goes up to the dock. Mm-hmm. Who has been fidgeting with the controls for several hours, Vicky said before.
Yeah.
And the Doctor reveals that they have somehow suddenly materialized within a force field.
Yeah, and they're being dragged down.
Yeah. And Ian goes, to where? And then we get a title plate. Next episode, yeah. The Web Planet.
Oh. The Web Planet.
By the way...
I have no idea what that's going to be.
Ombre, I know.
Do you know?
I have.
Okay, don't spoil it.
No. Okay, not a spoiler.
I can imagine what that means.
Okay, you know what? Keep not reading my Twitter feed. Because aforementioned JD, again, thank you so much, dude. and Gina as well, I think, mentioned that it is a hilariously, spectacularly bad episode.
Oh,
we are going to have so much fun, dude. I am so excited. I love the bad episodes.
In many ways, they're my favourites.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, we're going to have so much fun. I've seen screenshots. I haven't seen the episode or the episodes, but I've seen screenshots. And you know what? They're right.
I'll suspend judgment. I will suspend judgment.
Really? I was.
It sounds as though I am going to love it.
Yeah. And so will you, ladies and gentlemen.
But anyway, I think that concludes.
I think so as well. That's our review. We've got some listener reviews. Actually, we've got our reviews and then we've got listener reviews.
I went first last time.
You did indeed.
As we discussed. So away you go. Bombs away.
Okie dokie. I haven't actually thought about which score to give this. All right. So here we go. Reviews.
Reviews.
All right. We need a jingle for all of these bits, dude. All right. As I mentioned the last time, 2 weeks ago. Sorry, people. Really sorry for the hiatus. I'm a big fan of Roman culture, having studied Latin and whatnot. So I'm more excited by this historical episode than I am by, let's say, the French Revolution. Yeah.
Okay.
Or Aztecs or whatever.
I love the French Revolution.
French Revolution, super exciting, but I enjoy Rome more. Doesn't matter. You've seen my tats. Anyway, here's what I like about this episode. It is a great historical. It's good fun. It's got it's got a very elaborate plot, basically. It has lots of parallel plots. What I like most about the elaborate nature of this plot is that they're entirely autonomous. Every single time that we've had separate plot lines before, they have at some point been intertwined. Mm-hmm. Like we have, whatever, in the Aztecs, we've got Barb being a goddess and we've got Ian being a fighting warrior legend.
Yeah.
And they totally cooperate, but they are separate.
And they all end up together.
Yeah. They're constantly together,
yeah, they're
right?
Grouped.
They have their own plots, but they collaborate to some extent. Here, they are entirely autonomous, and it's actually kind of fun. I really like that. I like Vicky more than I did in the last episode.
Yeah.
She's still super annoying, but I like her more than I did the last time. And I like some of the humor in this story. Kablamo, bingo. I like this story. It was very entertaining. Here's what I dislike about the story. Right, we're going to be here for a while. So here's what I dislike about the story. The fucking slapstick goes overboard. All right? Totally overboard. There are some logic plot holes. What the shit, man? Chris Spooner, you wrote Reign of Terror? Great.
Dennis.
Dennis Spooner, sorry. Who's Chris Spooner?
No idea.
Oh, Chris Spooner. Dude, he does like a WordPress blog thing.
Right.
All right. Like a WordPress coding blog. All right, yeah, check out Chris Spooner. Anyway, shout out. So, Dennis Spooner, he wrote the Reign of Terror. Fantastic historical. He wrote this one. Fuck, my review is shit right now. All right. I don't like the portrayal of Nero. I don't. I think it's ridiculous the way that rape and murder is portrayed with such just levity. I think it's ridiculous that the Doctor actually physically murders a man and then laughs about it. I think it's ridiculous that Vicky aids in said murder, and even though she is a child who has seen death, she's murdered someone herself. She's seen an old guy murdered in the bushes.
Dude,
will not stop fucking grinning.
Have you not seen Dexter? I mean, seriously.
This is not Dexter, dude! This is not Dexter! This is freaking Doctor Who! It shouldn't be like this! I am upset by this.
She is Dexter.
I'm so upset by this. Okay.
She had an early childhood trauma and it has numbed her. I'm telling you. It all started with Sandy.
Fine. All right. I'm going to keep this brief because I'm not on a roll with this review. All right, that being said, I really enjoy this story. I think it's a lot better than most of the other historicals. I actually cannot remember what I gave The Reign of Terror, but whatever I gave it, here's what I'm giving this one. I'm giving it a... deducting points for it not being science fiction. I'm giving it a 3.7. I'm giving it a 3.7.
Oh my god, that was painful. Okay, so... I'll keep it short. So, I would make a lot of the same points you've made, but I would look at them at a slightly different angle. A lot of the things you gave detracting marks for, I thought were great. I loved the levity of the rape. I loved the levity of the murder. Like, there were all sorts of dark, weird subtext going on in this episode for me. The Doctor is back to being a bastard. We had a good period of the Doc trying to look like a human. Like, end of era Susan kind of time. He's a very good grandfather, and in the last episode we saw him being really nice and grandfatherly to Vicky.
Yeah.
Here, he seems to have, like, taken this young, innocent creature and, like, morphed her into himself. And she, like, finds rape and murder really funny. And, like, doesn't want to help anyone. Just absolutely is happy to go along with all of the horrible things that are happening. And even adds to them. I mean, she happily just decides, oh yeah, I'm just going to poison Nero. Seems like a laugh. Like, actually lost her humanity. I really enjoyed that. Like, I think I like the Dark Doctor. I like the Doctor to be a bastard. It gives him a bit more of an edge.
I agree with that, but, yeah.
So...
Fuck, can I revise my points?
No. As you said, I really enjoyed the historical setting. I actually think I really liked Dennis Spooner. His last episode was The Reign of Terror, which was a fantastic historical backdrop.
Yeah.
I have deducted marks in the past for lack of sci-fi, but actually, the two that he's done, I thought, worked really well. They really were, like, plot-driving devices.
Yes.
I would agree that I didn't like the portrayal of Nero. I think Nero could have been a slick, suave character. He could have been more deeply layered than the fat, greasy idiot he was. Like, I was expecting from Nero a schemer.
Yeah, exactly.
A schemer type.
Even like a Caligula type madman.
Yeah, I no, actually, I wouldn't have gone for that. I don't see Nero that way. I see Nero as more calculating than that.
Okay, yeah.
In this episode, Nero did not seem calculating at all.
No, he's a buffoon.
He's an insane buffoon. He jumps from one crazy point to another.
Yeah.
Like, he decides to burn down the city on a whim, essentially. I mean, I think historically it's not, like, known that he burned the city down.
That's true.
He was the man who, like, fiddled while Rome burned. But he wasn't, like, it's not definite he burned down the city.
Yeah.
But that seems to me like a really calculating move, like a really clever move, like something to do to force your plans through.
Agreed.
But the way it's presented, it's just as though it's...
happenstance.
Like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's just like, oh, the Doctor set something on fire, and he was like, hey, fire, let's do that.
In fact, he is...
Let's make that happen.
In fact, he is like the one indisputable ruler of the Roman Empire, but he has been allowed to be thwarted by, like, the council or the Senate for years.
But, like, I mean, I think it is true that emperors did need to have backing.
Sure.
Like, otherwise they wouldn't be able to maintain being an emperor. If they didn't have some sort of group that was on their side.
That's true. That's why you have, like, the Senate. But
Well, either you need the Senate on your side or you need the people to really be for you. Like, you need some sort of backing. You can't just do it by pure rule. There aren't any policemen in the Roman state. You've got an army.
Yeah.
You've got a standing army. But you need to keep someone happy. You need to keep the soldiers happy. You need to keep the people happy.
All that said, while I didn't like the portrayal of Nero, I really enjoyed this episode. I really enjoyed the dark subtext. I actually thought that the funny moments that were meant to be funny were actually quite hilarious on occasion. I liked the way there was like long-running jokes with payoffs at the end. Like, I actually liked that the Doctor never saw them. Like, it was building up throughout, and I actually thought it did add a degree of humour over the darkness. So, all that said, I am going to give this a flabby 4.1. I love this episode.
Yeah.
I could watch it again and again.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah.
Well done. Okay. Listener reviews.
Listener reviews.
Okay, so surprise, surprise. We've got some favourites. We've got some previous contributors, but gotta say, really, really sorry, but we've got so much material here that this first one in particular that we're going to read out, it's quite long. It is fantastic. As per usual.
Do you know what? I am absolutely overwhelmed by the quality of reviews we're getting.
As am I.
Like,
they're so much better than ours.
So much better.
Oh my god, they're so much better than ours.
Like, I think on a technical level, our reviews are poor. these are some really good technical reviews.
And humorous. And to the point.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I would say, in all honesty, read them in their entirety.
Yeah, we're going to... So what I was going to say was, apologies to the first one here that we're going to read out. It is a little bit longer than the other ones, and for that reason we're going to just read out part of it, but we will, as per usual, post all mini reviews on the website, so go to whobackwhen.com and check them out. Seriously, read them. So, shall we?
Yeah.
Okie dokie. Number one comes from previous contributor Kyle Rath. Kyle, thank you so much.
Hey, Kyle.
Fantastic review, as per usual. People who are not Kyle, check him out on Twitter. He is at Sinister Super Spy. That's super without any vowels, but it's all in one word. Check him out. All right, so here we go. He says, I could go on for hours about this episode, but that's why we have you guys. I digress. The TARDIS gang wind up in ancient Rome, and after falling off a cliff, spend a sunny month idling in some poor vacationing family's house eating grapes. In the spirit of Shakespeare's A Comedy of Errors, the plot splits into two, then four, as the intrepid travellers weave in and out of each other's paths on their journey through the court of Nero.
Identity theft, murder, conspiracy, deceit are the order for the day, and that's just from our friends in the good ship TARDIS. The serial flows and twists with great comedic timing, many coming from Hartnell. Vicky is somewhat like wallpaper for the majority, just sort of hanging around, offering tidbits of composition as needed. Ian and Barb are given the usual task of all the heavy dramatic lifting, as they experience opposing points on the class spectrum that was ancient Rome. Yeah, it's a good, very good point. There is little humour for Ian, unless he is with Barb at the beginning and end.
The Doctor manages to bumble his way into the heart of power, Nero's palace, all the while completely oblivious to the intent of the man whose identity he stole. I'm amazed at just how blatant and open-handed the bullshit factor is in this serial. The Doctor's performance on the lyre, or lack thereof, is priceless. The plot ties up the four threads as Nero gathers his soldiers and plots to burn Rome, with a little help from the Doctor, so he can rebuild it to his desire. Ian and Barb escape back to the villa, and while fire rages, so do the Doc and Vicky.
I was convinced at the end that Ian was going to give Bard the old rough and tumble for being knocked out. But it was 1965, and the BBC wouldn't have allowed such brazen sexual antics on TV at that time. The gang hops in the TARDIS, which is apparently fine, and we get another pointless interlude to the next episode.
Overall, Kyle gives this a 4.0 out of 5.
Which I think is a very reasonable mark.
It's a very reasonable mark.
Well, it's 0.1 from mine, so I agree.
Yeah, you know what? I kind of regret my mark. I've already said that.
I know.
It was... Ah, shit. The excitement of the moment. Anyway, all right.
There are plenty of shit things about this story. It's just how much emphasis you choose to place on them.
That is true.
There are plot holes, as you said.
Oh, my God. All right, so check this out, people. Kyle has then also provided a fantastic list of pros and cons, which you need to read. So go to the website. We're going to curtail it here.
Yeah.
But you can read the whole thing on whobackwhen.com. Sorry, Kyle, we've got another 3-minute reviews to cover as well, but fantastic.
Absolutely fantastic. Bravo.
Yeah, seriously. And your point about the class difference, I can't believe that we didn't bring that up.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't even pick up on that. That's such a fantastic point. Oh, God damn it, Kyle.
Did you consider yourself a fan of Rome?
I know. Well, I'm a fan of Latin, which actually didn't factor in at all. Thank you, TARDIS Translation Matrix. Okie dokie, number two.
Our next review comes from our great friend, our God, John David, who you can follow at Marius Kane. That's Kane with a K.
Yes, it is.
John says, time has passed since the TARDIS fell off a cliff, and the Doctor, Suzuki, and the practically married Barbara and Ian are squatting in a villa feeding on each other's grapes. The Doctor, Barbara and Vicky go to Rome, and we get Liar Liar Pants on Fire for four episodes, while Ian gets trapped in Les Miserables Gladiator.
Great pronunciation, thanks man. He goes on, the good. The first scenes in the villa are very good, especially between the Doctor and Ian and Barbara. They are now a family, and the scene with Barbara doing Ian's hair is incredibly well done.
The Doctor, when fighting the assassin, is obviously enjoying it far too much and gets really angry when Vicky interferes because he didn't get to spill blood himself. Hartnell was really changed, and this has to rate as one of his best performances.
Barbara, this week, is eyed up by a fat old emperor and obviously loving every single minute of it, running around Nero's bedroom like she's auditioning for a Carry-On film.
Ian is given more to do in this episode than this season to date. Galley slave, shipwrecked, gladiator, and back home in time for tea and crumpets at the villa.
The bad. Vicky's emotions this episode are boredom and excitement, and her irritation level is a 4.2.
I really hope that continues. Rating, I want to make a chart of it. The Vicky irritation factor. Overall, 4.3. It is a far better episode than I expected or hoped for.
Very nice.
Which I think is actually true. I wasn't expecting it to be great.
JD, what can I say? Fantastic review. As freaking always.
Freaking always.
God damn it. Why are our reviews so crap by comparison?
Do you know what we do? So... So, on the website, we list tropes, we list...
well, not yet, I'm going to add
it. Okay, you're
going to
add tropes and alien creatures, etc. Yeah. I think we should index by regular contributors. So, like, seriously, what a collection, what a great collection John David has put together.
Absolutely. Yeah, actually, all of our contributors, seriously, fantastic reviews. Anyway, that's enough kissing ass here. All right, dude. Thank you so much. All right, our next one comes from Davis of the Davis Principle fame.
I'm really sorry, didn't apply in this episode for the first time ever.
Yeah. Yeah. You can follow Davis on Twitter. He is at ShrubThe. And here is what he has to say. He goes, I must say, I greatly prefer the sci-fi elements of this show more than the historical episodes. Too bad. It could have been the edge of discussion. So I'll look on the bright side.
Here we go. Vicky seemed to be much less annoying in the story arc, although maybe she just didn't talk that much. Also, was it just me, or was the main plot for about half this story about different people wanting to have some fun with Barbara? A notable part of this episode is that they finally completely broke the Davis Principle. They stayed in Rome just for fun. They really didn't want to leave. Finally, I loved how the Doctor got his first taste of messing with history. He would learn to enjoy it even more later on.
This story definitely deserves a higher mark than the Rescue, as it was a real story. Very true. I would have to say that it is a good 3.4, mainly marking it down because it's a historical. I realize it deserves a much higher marking than The Rescue, but I don't want to be as easy on my scoring from now on.
Well, you did exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
So that was precisely what you did last week. You were like, I'm just going to be so much harder. But brilliantly pointed out, came up with the principle and picked out the exception that proved the rule.
If anyone is entitled to do so, it is this gentleman.
Actually, he is the only contributor on the show who is going to get a trope of his own.
Seriously, spoiler alert, you've already alluded to this. I haven't added this to the website, honestly.
Pressure, dude.
Well, to be completely honest, because I haven't entirely figured out how I'm going to do this yet, but I will. In the very near future, we will be able to, or you will be able to, track different tropes in Doctor Who, such as, for instance, the Davis Principle, or literal cliffhangers, or the let's split up and meet back here in 10 minutes trope, that sort of thing.
And what was my personal favourite? It was the, somebody has to
traverse a chasm.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Yes.
And yeah, so that's coming up in the future.
And our final review comes from, guess who? It's Gina Guerrero.
You know what? I'm going to do what I did a few episodes of Who Back When Ago, which she apparently enjoyed. Please let me know if I misunderstood that, Gina. But I will be reading my half of your review in the epic mini review voice.
Oh, right. Very cool. Anyway, people, you can follow Gina at GinaGuerrero1.
Yep, that's GinaGuerrero1.
So, Gina says, I enjoyed this episode for what it was trying to do, balancing comedy and drama. I was hopeful because the author of this story, Dennis Spooner, wrote The Mind Robber, which is a great first Doctor story. The ancient Roman sets and costumes were beautiful, and I loved Nero, who was both campy and sinister. Some stray observations. Although I found most of the humour unfunny and forced, the Doctor calling Ian Chesterfield actually got a genuine laugh from me. I'm not proud. I found it interesting and a little pervy that the Doctor wanted to take only Vicky to Rome, whilst blowing off Barb and Ian. And just to remind us that we're watching 1960s Doctor Who, Barb is chased by the rapey Nero, Benny Hill style.
Nice. She goes on, I noticed that Ian and Barb were becoming a bit more flirty in this story. Maybe it was all the wine they were drinking in the first episode. Once again, we get the Doctor fighting and bragging about his excellence in the Art of Fisticuffs, or Venusian Aikido, Third Doctor style, which I didn't really buy. I don't know if I can keep this voice up, dude.
Keep going.
One thing that bothered me was the Doctor seeming bemused and incessantly giggling to himself through most of the story, not even batting an eye when he is informed that he is to kill Nero. Lastly, was it just me, or was everyone else hoping that we were going to get a shirtless Ian on the slave ship? Probably just me. I did not enjoy the story as much as I hoped, so my rating is 3.7. Love you guys! 3 exclamation points this time. We only got 2 the last time, dude.
I'm heartened.
We're growing. We're growing. Oh my god, dude. Hey, do you remember that time when we were just 2 exclamation points? Now we're 3. Gina, we love you too! So many exclamation points!
You have made us whole again.
I love the Benny Hill comment, by the way. Nice reference.
Actually, brilliant reference. I couldn't think what it was. What did it remind me of? It's a Benny Hill sketch.
Oh my god. Oh god, fantastic. Gina, thank you so much. Davis, thank you so much. JD, you're awesome. Thank you so much. Kyle, Kablamatron, really, really sorry that we had to curtail your mini review. Thank you so much. Fantastic all around.
Excellent.
Oh my god, dude, we did it. So, all right. We just can't seem to do a short review.
Man, it's because we just love too much. That's our problem. We just love too much.
All right, people, this concludes the Who Back When review of The Romans.
Hope you enjoyed yourselves.
Oh my god. Catch us hopefully next week. Flappy, please.
Hey! I'm not taking all the blame.
Hey! Whatever. All right. Hopefully catch us next week. We will absolutely endeavour to make it so. When we will be reviewing The Web Planet, which is going to be hilarious because it is going to be shit. Cannot wait to see it.
Don't do that. It might be amazing. Like, I might find it amazing.
Actually, you know what? If anyone might, it might be you.
Yeah. The guy who enjoyed the rape scenes.
Okie dokie. Shama lama ding dong, people, and rock on.
Catch you on the flippity flap.
Chud chow.
Who back when?